You're recording.
All right, we are back in session. We are in section three, number one. This is a time and place scheduled for the informal interview for the Powell's Animal Crematory in case number 21-131. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given the ARS 32-2234. Ms. Zimmerman, am I saying that right? Sorry, I'm losing my place here. Please come forward, introduce yourself and your attorney or represented by counsel.
Where would you like us to go?
Right here.
Either one.
Yeah, there'll be a Dan as well.
Okay.
He'll be speaking too. Why don't you go ahead and pull one more chair?
Yeah.
Okay.
Will you please each introduce yourself and state your name for the record?
I'm Catherine Heerman, and I'm with Powell's.
I'm Daniel Heerman, and I'm with Powell's.
I'm Andrew Plattner, counsel for Powell.
Thank you. And excuse me, when I'm printing out my script last night, I didn't have any of your names, so I have it written now, but it's not. I'm going to try to get this right. Okay, so. Ms. Heerman, Ms. Heerman, you have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censoring you, placing a license on probation, with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to a formal hearing. And I guess as I'm reading that, all that language may not be exactly right, because generally this is for a veterinarian on a premise. I'm not sure you do any continuing education for your license. No? I think so. All right, the purpose of the informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all the materials you submitted. If you have any additional materials you'd like to present to the board, please do so now.
Thank you.
I think Dan brought some additional materials. You want those to be introduced now or when, during the Q&A session?
Let's distribute it now if you want, or we can... Let's just do it now. I mean, I don't want to
do we have enough copies for everybody? Or
no.
There are examples. Maybe we'll hold on to it.
Okay, let's hold on to it then.
Thank you.
Reference it, read it. Or...
No.
Okay, so the proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it's important that everyone speaks loudly and clearly, and then only one person speaks at a time. We'll begin by asking the lead board member sign this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you'll be given a chance to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complainant will also be given an opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone getting information during this interview, you may ask them through me. Ms. Solomon, will you please give us a brief summary of the case?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. On August 8, 2020, Lola, a 16-plus-year-old female chihuahua, was euthanized by Dr. Collins from Pets at Rest. Mr. Hamby, the pet's owner, elected to have the dog individually cremated with the ashes returned. On August 10, 2020, Mr. Hamby decided he wanted to witness the cremation of his dog, Lola. A date and time was set up for that with the crematorium. On September the 3rd, 2020, when the pet owner went to view the cremation of his dog, a cat was in the viewing room. After some research, it was determined that Dr. Collins mislabeled the dog and the dog was communally cremated 4 days earlier on August the 31st, 2020. On April the 19th, 2021, the board reviewed the complaint that was filed against Dr. Collins and ordered to open an investigation with respect to the crematory's process.
Thank you. Ms. Huerman, this time I'd like to swear you in. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
And I guess, Daniel, if you're going to talk to, then...
I do as well.
Thank you. Ms. Huerman, we'd like to now give you an opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant.
I would like to turn this over to my son because he was there and he's got all the pertinent information ready for me.
So a couple years ago, we moved to a software system called SRS. It's used by over 5,000 companies within six countries, and it's used for human and pet tracking of bodies through the process. What we've done is every vet practice and clinic has their own unique identifier where they must log in, put the pet's name, the service type, and any other special notes they have, which then prints off a barcode, which is placed inside of a sealed plastic holder, which also has a color coding and wording specifically telling you what service type it is, whether it's a partition cremation, a communal cremation. These barcodes are scanned off at every stage of the process. And again, my phone, if I'm helping a pet parent and they're coming up even to pick up a pet, I have to scan it. It records when I did it, what step I did. Part of the reason we implemented this was because there does appear to be a lot of user error on maybe technician or practice sides, and we didn't want to be held responsible for improper instructions for that. And I can pass these around for you.
Dan, if you wouldn't mind explaining to ladies and gentlemen on board the process and the fact that in this particular matter, the service and the process has been the same since day one of your relationship with Dr. Collins and her practice.
With her practice, correct. It has.
So explain that a little bit if you could.
So whenever we set up a new practice, one of the first onboarding things is to give them their own unique login and password for logging in their pets. Many years ago, we used to do paper forms and stuff. We haven't done that for over 3 years.
And if I may? Okay, thank you. The simple two points I think that we're trying to make here is that, and we certainly do appreciate, based upon the complaints, the board looking at not only the practice but also PALS. We understand that. Just to, we hope, think very stark contrasting points. One is the process and the services have been the same with this practice since the practice started with PALS. So nothing has changed. It's always been the same with the color codes and the software, et cetera. So if there was a mistake made here, which there was an admitted mistake done by the practice, then it was by the practice. It wasn't by PALS. They had done nothing wrong at all in this matter. Number one. Number two, happy to be here and explain the process in any way that you'd like them to do so. Number three is we find nothing in Arizona law that would subject PALS to any sort of censure, discipline, non-discipline, or anything, simply because the facts don't add up to them having done anything wrong in this matter.
Do you have anything further?
I think we're good. Thank you.
So now I'd like to ask board members if you have any questions.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask if there has been any history of problems with the zip ties, which both you and I personally just tested.
We had an issue last year prior to this happening with the doctor for pets over 100 pounds with the white zip ties.
Lola was a Chihuahua, so I don't think that would.
Yes. Was.
And what was the issue with, were they brittle and breaking?
They would, we tried a new zip tie over a year and a half ago, and for pets over 100 pounds, they were finding that it would get crinkly and could crack, And so when we got the first report of it, we immediately discontinued their use for large pets.
I just have a question. I'm just curious how frequently pet parents witness a cremation.
I would say we do anywhere from 1 to 3 a week.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, because it sounds like from what you said earlier about I don't want to say common, but it happens where technicians or clinics make errors in the labeling of these pets before they get to you. So can you describe to me, I get that the tags are on them and you scan them, literally scan them, but any other practices that you have in place to ensure the right pet is in the bag? Is it ever opened upon arrival or?
I would say if we're noticing there's a 20 pound or more difference, we're definitely going to open them up, but there is the issue of urine, feces, bloodborne pathogens and stuff that opening the bags would expose people to.
So there's no protocol upon arrival that helps kind of detect that immediately that there was a...
I don't understand your question.
So when the pet actually arrives at your facility, anything that could... If I'm understanding this correctly, you don't open them, you just tag them with these SPAR-coded tags.
We don't receive the pet until they've got the ID attached to them.
So they attach the ID at the clinic, zip tie them on. You
correct.
Scan it there, you never open it unless somebody detects this isn't a Great Dane, it's a cat, kind of thing.
Correct, the weight difference is 20 pounds.
Yeah.
So in this case, because the Chihuahua and the cat were pretty close in size, that wouldn't have been detected by your staff?
No.
Correct.
And the first time you were aware that there was a problem was when you opened it in front of the owner?
Correct.
Was there any evidence from what you saw in this case of failure of the tag? The zip tie?
The tags were securely attached to the bodies. I provided a field rep statement confirming that we picked them up that way as well, too.
This is Nikki Frost. I have a question. So when it comes to a 20 pound weight difference, where did that exactly come from? Just because in this case, percentage of body weight wise was so incredibly significant on both patients. Where did 20 pounds come from? And can somebody elaborate on that or why exactly that's the situation?
It would be an eye judgment, and we do have scales in the back. Again, with the number of pets and opening everything up, it's a generalized practice.
Maybe return to the point that you've got the system in place, you've got the software in place, the practice has everything they need to do it the right way.
We're anticipating the doctors or the practices telling us the correct information.
Because those are the forms that they get from you.
So, just for my own...
I do have... Sorry. I said one more.
Go ahead, if you...
So just, and I have one other question regarding the tags. We did get a copy submission of the tags that were completed for both of the submissions. Is that filled out completely? Because there were a lot of blanks there. Is that how you all accept that as a completed submission?
From the veterinary practice, yes, they're allowed to provide additional information. Most of them won't provide the pet parents' address, phone numbers, emails, because they have it at their practice.
Privacy issue a little bit. You know, we don't need to know.
Can you speak up a little bit and repeat what you said?
Get a little closer to the mic.
I just said it's a privacy issue and we don't need to know the pet parents' name.
But But I think what you said, though, is if the doctor or their practice wanted to fill out the information, they could. So to the board member's question, if it's blank, it's because the doctor chose not to fill it out.
And the software, when they're filling it out on their end through their steps, doesn't let them proceed unless they put the basic necessary information.
And sorry, is species not one of the required?
Species is not.
Any other questions, Ms. Frost?
No, thank you.
So Ms. Solomon, and then you had something?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask, do you standardly, as part of your intake, the veterinarian inputs the information, prints it out, it goes, that's what goes in the tag, you provide them with the tag containers and the zip ties?
And the bags.
And the bags, thank you. And when they get to you then, are they weighed as part of your intake?
No.
No, okay, thank you.
Any other questions from the board?
I have one, it was more just from my own knowledge. Had this situation have occurred where the owner had not wanted to be present, right? So it wasn't gonna be a watched cremation, but it was still a individual. If, would PALS have process in place to say, this is supposed to be an individual of a cat and it's not a cat, or would you have detected it at that point and alerted the clinic to the problem? Because here, the owner was there, but like, I'm just thinking for all the other individuals that I send in.
Yeah.
Would you have detected the fact that this did not match up? And are there processes in place to alert the clinic that, hey, we got the wrong pet? Because ethically, I just want to make sure when I'm sending ashes back, I'm sending back the right ashes.
Well, that's our goal. The question is somewhat hypothetical, but if we notice there's a difference or we've ever noticed a difference, we immediately contact the veterinary practice.
And that has happened in the past. We have
caught mistakes.
Mistakes and notify them immediately.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, since switching to this system, you said 3 years ago, has it reduced error rates?
Significantly, I'd say for spelling names and things like that, yes. And then also for service requests. So it's no longer one technician changing another technician's writing or trying to gauge something based upon someone's handwriting. Yeah, it's been very beneficial.
So then another question, and I guess the more I see, the more questions I have. How does this attach to the bag, and how is the bag sealed?
Can you repeat that for me?
How does this attach to the bag itself, and then how does the bag seal?
So the bags, like this would be a smaller bag. Again, this will be based upon the vet practice. Best practice would be to tie it. Obviously, I'm not doing a great job here, but no, to tie it.
Fine. I get the idea.
And then zip tie it below the knot.
Okay. And that's a standard way that everybody should be doing that.
Yeah.
And I mean, when you have a new client, you're going to show them that's the way you do it.
Right? We walk through everything with them, and once a year we offer what's called a lunch and learn, where we go out and revisit everything.
Yeah. Right. Since I had seen that, I just needed to visualize it.
Well, it's loose on your piece of paper, but when you go into the bag, they pull it as tight as they can, so it doesn't go, it's below the knot.
Yeah. And I understand when you put a good animal in there. You want to get all the air out, tie a really good knot, and freeze it as quick as you can. If they can't get it to you, freeze it. Any other board members have questions? All right. So technically, we're hearing from the complaint now because the board is appointed in this case. And I don't think we're going to question ourselves. So, from the PALS team, do you or legal counsel have any additional remarks or questions that you would like to ask?
If I may, thank you again for the opportunity to be here. And we do appreciate the fact that the board is looking out for this. I've got pets myself, and I would want that to be done well. We've gone down this road before of cremation, so I do understand it, and I understand the sensitivity of it, and I appreciate sincerely what the board has asked PALS to do. I would just like to reiterate that the facts of this matter are really clear about what had happened here, and I don't need to repeat those. That and the fact that there really is no basis to penalize PALS. And I've learned a couple things here today that I didn't know as well, which was also that they do a lunch and learn with clinics as well, and I think that's admirable too. I think you can tell that PALS certainly has implemented services, implemented procedures, and done things to make this process better for everybody, including the clinic, and probably most importantly, the families of the deceased. So I think with that said, we're certainly asking the board to dismiss this matter in its entirety.
Thank you. Any more questions from board members? Seeing none, this concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. And Ms. Solon, you are the lead.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Based on the view of the record and the testimony provided today, I find I see no violations related to PALS and move to dismiss case 21-131.
I second that.
Motion on the floor and a second to dismiss this case. Is there any further discussion? I guess I would say because the attorney in the letter they submitted asked that we not even have this informal interview. But once we got it scheduled, it's going to happen. So this was always more about the inquiry into the case. I mean, if we'd originally seen the tags and the zip ties and even that bag, and had more input from that side of it, but that wasn't part of the original complaint, really. That was just kind of a sidebar. So it just raised a lot of questions because we didn't see all that, we didn't know all that. But so having this, even though it came a little bit at a time, and first it was pictures, and then we got the real thing to touch. It is very helpful to have all that and to totally understand.
Sorry, we had to bring them down here to
yes.
have an educational presentation.
Yeah,
but yeah.
I mean, it's not a total loss that you know a little bit more about the agency that oversees what you do for a living either. I mean, it doesn't hurt to us to learn and you to learn too.
And I think there were a lot of us who actually thought pets were weighed and kind of triage when they came in, so I don't want to be spreading information that's not accurate, so it's hard for me to know that that doesn't actually happen.
Yeah, this is Nikki. Working with the crematorium, I hadn't looked into it myself, the variances between crematoriums, just because the crematorium I work with does require the species, the breed. They do weigh every patient coming in. We're alerted if there's a certain percentage of error in weight, you know, those types of things. So that's a internal practice that I didn't realize wasn't something across the board with crematoriums. So I think that's something that as far as vendor practice, you know, having elaborate conversation with the vendor, that you're doing business with, and what are the things that they're doing above and beyond? What are the things that they're meeting standards on? You know, more than just we're doing business with you because we need the service. So it's been very educational, for sure.
All right, so the motion on the floor is to dismiss. Any further discussion?
Hi, this is Lauren Handy. Am I allowed to speak at this time?
No, because you're not the complainant. The board is the complainant.
Okay.
On the other matter, which I think is still pending, we pended the other case, didn't we?
No, the other case, the veterinarian was offered a consent agreement, which he has declined to sign, so it's been moved to informal.
Okay, so at that point, you are the complainant, and you will be invited to speak on the case against the veterinarian.
Okay.
But in this proceedings, you are a courtesy witness, because it kind of pertained to it, but the board is the actual complainant in the case.
Right, that's correct. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so since we brought this all the way to an informal process, let's do a roll call on this.
Dr. Byrne?
Can you restate it?
The motion is to dismiss this case.
Aye.
Ms. Crager?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Logie?
Aye.
Ms. Sullivan?
Aye.
Dr. Ray?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion passes.
Motion passes, and the board has voted to dismiss this case. This concludes the matter. You will receive written confirmation of the board's action shortly, and thank you for being here and participating today.
Thank you very much.
I know it was informative for us, and
yes.
Hope you got something out of it too.
Thank you for your time.
Always call with questions if you have questions at all.
You're right.